Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. Beautiful sunny day in Park City, headed to a high of 80, 89 over in the Heber Valley. Going to be gorgeous out there. This is Larry Warren, and the show is Mountain Money, along with Doug Wells, my usual co-host, and looks great out there.
Usual, except for the second half of July. You're going to miss me for the next 2 weeks.
Well, everyone needs a vacation at some point.
Indeed.
So we'll let you out, and we'll bring in some co-hosts for the next couple of weeks. We have a good show today, a couple of local guests and a national guest. We're going to start with Renee Robertson. She is author of The Coaching Solution. She was in the telecom business and worked for MCI and Verizon and was around when WorldCom exploded. And or imploded, I guess.
It exploded and then it imploded.
And so she has tales to tell of that and of coaching, mentoring, providing leadership for people in your team in a business. So we will be talking with her about her book, The Coaching Solution, How to Drive Talent Development, Organizational Change, and Business Results.
And then we're going to switch gears. Things are getting really exciting in the real estate industry here in Park City, and we're going to have in studio Mike Mazzoni with the Park City Realty Group and Jim Harsh with Moundtown Realty Group, and they're going to talk to us about the Independent Real Estate Coalition that they're putting together. That'll be interesting. And our final guest will be Richard Reed. He is the Executive Vice President and Director with Bank Card and Customer Channel Management at Zions Bank Corporation. And that's a mouthful, but essentially, Larry, all our credit cards have computer chips. And I believe sometime this year, all the merchants are going to be required to accept them.
Change is coming. The swiping your card is going away.
Change is coming, and it seems like every month we hear about some retailer getting hacked and our credit cards get lost, the credit card numbers get stolen, and this is an effort to combat that. So we're going to learn more about that. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Hi, this is Bob Dillon, a lawyer in the Park City office of Jones Waldo with 38 years of legal experience in complex real estate transactions. Proud supporters of KPCW, Jones Waldo provides local businesses with legal services in areas ranging from real estate to employment law. Our website is joneswaldo.com.
Hello, I'm Justin Keyes. As an attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo, I'm pleased to support Mountain Money on KPCW. Our firm provides construction, real estate, and general business legal services to the Park City community. We are online at joneswaldo.com and can be reached at 435-200-0085.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. We have on the line with us Renee Robertson, author of The Coaching Solution, How to Drive Talent Development, Organizational Change, and Business Results. Welcome to Mountain Money, Renee.
Thank you, Larry. Good morning, Doug. How are you guys?
Just fine. And we are interested in the subject of your book, The Coaching Solution. And in it, you're talking not about so much about these freelance coaches who parachute in and coach employees, but you're talking about developing an internal coaching element in a business, right?
Yes, that's right.
So explain that a little more.
Yeah, so, and thank you for the introduction earlier. Yes, I was around during the implode, the explode and the implode of WorldCom.
We'll get around to some war stories in a bit.
Yeah, we can for sure. But one of the things that we found incredibly helpful in engaging our talent and keeping our talent and growing our talent, you know, at MCI, WorldCom, Verizon, was using coaching. And what we had done is, to your point, many times companies will just parachute in a coach for a single solution or a single intervention to address something that's happening with a leader or a team. And this is taking more of a holistic approach and building coaching as a competency inside the organization and then using it to deploy different types of engagement or leadership training or mentoring programs or action learning programs day in and day out. So it really becomes a fabric of the organization and what people do, what managers do, what leaders do, and what employees do.
And Renee, talk to us about, I think there's probably times where it's appropriate to have either model, right? Somebody that's in for short term and then somebody that's part of your team. When does it make sense to do each of those models?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know what? I think it depends on the company and the culture and what the goal is, right? If the goal is to build a culture that's more geared towards performance and learning, or is going through, you know, you mentioned change. Change is amongst us constantly these days and across everyone, small, medium, large businesses. If change is going to be around for a while and it's something transformative, then having an internal coaching program might prove beneficial because it's more sustainable and it becomes ingrained in the fabric. And there's a support mechanism in place to support that change and constant evolution. If you're trying to address an isolated situation, the performance of a team, you want to take them from good to great, you want to prepare a couple individuals to, you know, ready themselves for a promotion, you know, or a different type of assignment, then bringing in an external coach might be a better solution for something like that.
How big of a company do you have to be to develop an internal coaching program? Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of small businesses around here, and I just don't see how it works in a small firm.
Yeah, to build a large-scale internal program, you know, probably won't work in a smaller-sized company. However, you know, there's different ways to approach it and have the same experience. For example, you could bring a coach in or some training folks in to teach you how to be more coach-like in your approach and sort of teach the leadership and the members of the team to use coaching skills. And in that way of learning that competency, you can sort of develop a coaching culture, if you will, that's more innovative and geared towards performance or whatever your goal is.
And let's talk about a couple examples. I think the lifeblood of any industry is, you know, if you can sell your product, if you have customers, you're much more likely to succeed. And if you can recruit a good team and keep them, you're also likely to succeed. And you have a chapter on both of those subjects. First, coaching on the inside sales organization, and then second, coaching for talent acquisition and selection. Give us a couple main themes that you try to share with your clients on those important topics.
Let's talk about sales first. I'll take that one first. From a sales perspective, I think you know, there's lots of different ways that you can approach the sales organization, and if you just think about the life cycle of a sale, you know, looking at how you segment your sales teams, how you engage your sales teams, how they face off to the customer. You know, there's different applications around there that a sales manager can use, take a coaching approach with their own people, right? This is, in my view, this is more about asking than telling. Many times, you know, especially as a former sales leader myself, it's easier to tell a salesperson what to do than to sort of ask them what they think they should do and coach them through that process. And it's through that process of asking those questions helps you build the thinking capability inside your sales organization and helps them become more innovative and deliver more, enhanced customer experiences in the sales process.
Renee,
so that would be one way in the sales.
Yeah, let me ask you, you know, one of the new things that has come out in the last decade in sales is really these predictive sales tools. We have a large company here in Utah, just got valued at over $1 billion. It's been going 10 or 12 years, but it's really amazing the tools that they have to enable the sales team. That company is called Inside Sales, started by a gentleman named David Elkington. It's down near in Utah County here in Utah. What do you think about all of these automation tools to help sales folks? Is that a good trend, or do you see some danger signs with that?
You know what? I think it's a good trend. You know, I'm probably from the old school where you inspect what you expect. and having systems and automation to help you sort of manage the process. You know, sales can be a complicated process depending on what you're selling. And any opportunity, I think, to leverage technology is a good thing. The gotcha is getting people to adapt to the technology and integrate it into what they do every day. That's the trick shot.
That's a good point. And what's the trick shots with finding and recruiting and keeping all-star employees?
Yeah. So I think the first step is to really know what you want. That's the first step. Many times I've seen this with managers across, you know, you name it, IT, sales, customer service, what they think they want and what they need could be two different things. So really understanding what the need is the first step, because that defines the expectation for the new employee, for the candidate, for the manager. And that's usually where things break down, when expectations aren't managed properly. Once you're able to manage the expectation, then you can start to sort of scope out what that good employee or great employee could look like. And then you can start to search for that employee. And I think part of it is also understanding what motivates that individual and what keeps them engaged and how what they're doing really connects to their passion in life, and finding a way for them to connect to that in the work that they do, I think, is super important.
Good points. And what about, you know, another topic is innovation. You know, mm-hmm. Utah's really got a lot of startups going, a lot of part of the country does. And it seems like these young companies, whether they're staffed with young people or middle-aged or people in the later stage of their career, these young companies are innovative, they're hungry, they're aggressive. Is there a way that you can help a more established company, maybe that's 20 years old, has been in business, is successful? Is there a way that you can help infuse innovation, creativity, and energy into an older organization?
Absolutely. You know, I think it doesn't matter really how old you are or how long you've been doing something. As long as you're open to the change, that's sort of step one, sort of knowing your people. And if they're open to that, then that should send you a signal. If they're not open to that, well, that's a different story. But if they are open to being innovative and changing, coaching creates a great opportunity for that. Because the challenge that I see these days, no matter what industry we're in, what size company we're in, this sort of goes back to the technology thing. The good news about technology is it makes life easier for us in so many ways. The bad news is we're on 24/7. And because of that, we have more and more demands on our time. What coaching allows is to sort of create a space where a leader, an entrepreneur, whoever, fill in the blank, has carved out some time for themselves to really think, and perhaps think strategically with a partner, think innovatively about what's next in the future, and begin to flesh that out so that then they can align what they're doing in their business, in their life, fill in the blank again, to achieve those goals.
Yeah, Renee, you are a consultant with a Trilogy Development is your firm, a learning and consulting firm, but your knowledge comes from being part of one of the biggest business stories of, what, two decades ago now? Trying to think back when MCI and Verizon merged, giant telecom companies. WorldCom was somehow in that mix, and WorldCom mm-hmm. was a giant scandal. So you were in the middle of all that. How in the world did the companies combine these different, I guess, kind of cowboy Wild West cultures into one cohesive organization?
Yeah. So at WorldCom, I think everyone knows the story there. So I don't know if cohesive ever really seemed to be.
Well, it's I forget the guy's name, except I think it was Bernie, and he, yes. He ran a motel in Alabama and somehow built out of a motel WorldCom.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. So,
and that part we should all applaud. That part,
we
you know,
should.
In the early days, I think that was just a lot of chutzpah and hard work. And unfortunately, it's a slippery slope, and they went the wrong path. But in the early days, there was a lot for him to be proud of.
Yeah, yeah. You know, same with MCI. Bill McGowan founded a great company with a great culture that helped, you know, really change the face of telecommunications for the way it is today. But to your point, Larry, about bringing companies together, I think, you know, at the time of the Verizon-MCI integration, we were fortunate enough to have incredible executive leadership who had the foresight to say we want to continue with a great culture and build a great culture. And because of that and the efforts that they put into bringing the companies together, you know, we had a lot to clean up still from WorldCom. System integration still hadn't achieved its, you know, where we wanted to be. You know, the people integration probably was easier at that point. But, you know, through good leadership, through shadow of that good leadership, right? I'm a big believer in the shadow that we cast, you know, inspires others to act and behave the way that they do. And I think as a result of that and having our leaders see that coaching was a great methodology to sort of bring the company together and get to one culture and one company was brilliant at the time. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and it must have been a very challenging period of time for the hundreds, if not thousands, of employees that were doing their jobs well and commendably, and to have to go through that. And I did want to ask you, Larry mentioned that the name of your company is Trilogy Development. That would imply three chapters, three phases to your journey.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe what the first two phases of that are? And is there a third phase that you're looking forward to going forward, or are you currently in your third phase?
Oh, well, when I came up with the name for my company, Trilogy is sort of, in my view, on the path to development. I think there's three stages. I think the first is really preparing yourself for change. The second stage is preparing yourself to, you know, manage people or work with people. And really the next stage is leading organizations. No matter what size, small, medium, or large, the concept fits. I would say, who knows? Maybe there's more in phase three, or there's always a constant cycle because we're constantly working on ourselves, we're constantly working in our business to make them better, and we're constantly, for me at least, working with other organizations to help them achieve the success that they want to achieve. So.
Well, I was a little off the mark on Trilogy. I assumed that that had something to do with your personal journey. Let me try a different tack because I always like to ask a little bit about the person's individual journey. In your About the Author section, the last couple sentences, and we all do this, you know, it's a little about the author and it gives your education and your career experience, and then a little bit about your personal experiences. And you mentioned that you're proficient in French. Why was that? You know, you only get to put down two or three points there. Is French an important part of your life? And how did it become an important part?
Mm. Yes, my mother was French. French is my second language. I have family in France. So growing up, I spent many, many summers visiting family and learning just to have an open mind and new and different experiences. And I really attribute that time in my life to helping me establish being a really good change agent and being adaptable. And it's sort of something that's carried through me. You know, I'm a big believer. Don't forget where you came from. So that's why it's there.
Renee, thanks very much for joining us. Our guest has been Renee Robertson, the founder and CEO of Trilogy Development, which is a learning and consulting firm. And the book is The Coaching Solution, How to Drive Talent Development, Organizational Change, and Business Results. Thanks for joining us, Renee.
Thank you for having me.
You know, we have a great day and a great week of July weather ahead of us, heading to a high of 80 today, and that'll be the high most of the week under mostly sunny skies. We don't have that threat of afternoon thunderstorms like we've had the last couple of weeks, so should be pretty good to get out and enjoy. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Mike Mazzoni about the new independent real estate coalition of the smaller boutique real estate firms in town. We'll be back after this.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch counties.
This summer, tune into KPCW every Tuesday to join us for This Green Earth. We'll bring you the latest on all things environmental,
including extreme weather, melting sea ice, crazy wolverines, wild flowers, and sweaty polar bears.
All that every Tuesday at 9 a.m.
Brought to you by
Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Vail Resorts,
and Rocky Mountain Power.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Larry, always enjoy talking to the national authors. We're lucky our producer Beth Fracken lines us up with some great speakers. And I want to point out, I get a kudo. That was a national author. I did talk about innovation, but I managed to avoid talking about Apple computers.
The word did not cross your lips, and I'm shocked.
There we go. We're going to switch gears.
And, am I looking at your wrist and not seeing an Apple Watch on it yet? Oh, no, it's there. Okay, it was under your cuff.
Under the cuff.
Yes, there is a new Apple Watch
there. And speaking of innovation, we're going to bring innovation and come back to Park City. In studio with us is Mike Verzoni, with Park City Realty Group, and Jim Harsh with Mountain Realty Group. And they're doing some innovative things in the real estate industry here in Park City. In specific, you guys are launching what you're calling the Independent Real Estate Coalition. Tell us what that is and why there's a need for that here in Park City.
So about 6 months ago, maybe 7 months, just before Christmas, I approached the principal of Glenwild Realty, Jake Dolney, who's been a long time. Jake grew up in Park City, and I said to him, you know, Jake, we should sit down at least once a month and kind of collaborate on some ideas, and as being small independents, and kind of talk about the industry as independents, and, you know, figure out where we are going as independent brokers and how we can stay in the game, if you will, and get some attention brought to us. So this coalition was kind of born out of that, and then we talked to Jim Harsh of Mountain Town Realty Group and John Ordine of Bald Eagle Realty, which has been around Park City for a long, long time. And so we're into our second half of the year now, and actually we're having a meeting after this interview and to try to plan out our next phase of what we're going to do with this coalition.
So, Jim, what's the advantage of the smaller firms in town banding together loosely in this coalition?
Well, I'm a very small brokerage myself, and so we looked at it as an opportunity to share resources with Glenwild and Park City Realty Group and Bald Eagle, so that we could kind of pool our advertising for the Park Record, for other resources, so that, you know, it's a little tough to do it on your own, and we looked at it, if the four of us got together, we could share some of those as well as some personnel in certain areas.
Why do you guys want to stay small in this era of, I mean, Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway is in the real estate game. Why do you want to have small shops?
I think for myself personally, Larry, I mean, I've been here 23 years, and for me, you know, Park City in my opinion, is about local. It's about independence. It's about KPCW. It's about the small, you know, locally owned park record. I think it would be a shame if, and no, you know, we love all our counterparts at all those companies, and really companies are about the people. But for us and for me personally, and I think for these guys, we want to be nimble. The industry is changing. You know, like it or not, it's changing, and it's going to change quick. And, you know, I personally want to be small and nimble versus having 100 to 150 people to try to change all at one time. So I think there's an advantage to that.
How about you, Jim? That's a good question, Larry. What do you see as the role and the importance of having the independent real estate agents here, the smaller firms?
Again, I agree with Mike on the local basis. I personally came out of large management structures before I got into real estate, and I wouldn't want to manage a whole ton of people. So I can make my own decisions, be flexible when I need to be flexible, and again, it's something that I didn't feel a need to really grow my brokerage with a lot of agents.
And I think it's important when people come from out of town or they're moving here, or they're, you know, just changing the size of their house, either because they're having kids and they're going larger, or their kids are off to school and they're going small. Right. Choice is important. And I think the independents, along with the larger firms here, give people choice. There's a match for each, which brings up an interesting point is, you guys are in an unusual industry. In most industries, you truly are competing with the other firms. In your case, you have to work alongside those other firms because there's two parties to every transaction, and you guys are working together on a probably weekly, if not daily, basis. How do you handle that? That's kind of an unusual situation.
Actually, it's pretty easy. We're all pretty well trained. We've been here. We know the products. It doesn't matter what brokerage is behind your name, because real estate is basically a personal transaction with you and your client. They don't necessarily pick you because of the – maybe initially they would pick you because you have a big brand name behind you. But if you put yourself out there, and I do mailings, I do a lot on the internet, and it's more a personal contact in how you conduct yourself in a transaction as opposed to who's necessarily on the other side of the transaction.
So how does the coalition work? Now, I spoke with a partner of one of your firms a couple of weeks ago. He said, for example, I've got a client who's interested in looking at Glen Wild property. Mm-hmm. But I'm based in Old Town, so you're trading clients back and forth, or how does that work? You're sending a referral to a Glen Wild agent.
We can do it in several different ways. First of all, just to clarify, we still are our own brands. We are Park City Realty Group. Jake is Glen Wild. Jim is Mountain Town. So we're not tied financially in any way. But as an example, it's a very small town and a lot of people know a lot of brokers. And I had a existing client who owns two lots in Glen Wild. And, Glen Wild is a challenging market in the sense it's very specific, right? So I approached the client and I said, look, this is kind of what we have going on with Jake up there. You know us both personally, why don't we just take the listing together and split it? So I think in that regard, I answered the question for the client before they asked what I knew what was going on in their mind, because, you know, I mostly concentrate in town, Old Town, those types of areas, Lower Deer Valley. Glen Wild may not be my specialty. So now together I can work on that project with Jake, and vice versa. He can, you know, he's kind of known for Glen Wild. Well, now he can say, well, look, I've got these other guys outside of my little niche. And I think it'll make his, you know, business grow and thrive in that direction as well.
I actually use Jake. I have a large listing up in Glen Wild myself, and I happen to be on vacation. And needed somebody to cover a showing of the listing. And so I felt very comfortable just calling up Jake and saying, hey, can you handle it for me? And he stepped right in and took care of it.
Well, you know, the way selling real estate has evolved in the last decade or even shorter time period than that are real estate teams. This is kind of a way of creating an informal real estate team where you've got each other's backs.
Exactly. You know, we want to take down the barriers in real estate. We kind of want to raise the bar. I personally don't. I've been caught in the past hiring agents who think they want to be full-time agents, and when they realize the 50 to 60 hours a week that goes with it to do it properly, they've kind of back off and they kind of go away. So I think we're doing this as kind of a service to all brokerages to say, look, at whoever we hire, we want to make sure they're at the same standards as all of us as brokers are, and going to really, really put a push onto this business.
You know, the nice thing about radio, I've seen your ads in the Park Record, you've mentioned that. The nice thing about radio is it gives us a chance to talk about topics in a little more detail than is possible in a quick soundbite or a small ad or even a half page or full page ad in the paper. And I think a question all of us have, you mentioned earlier, Mike, that, you know, a lot of us know multiple real estate agents, right? I don't know, probably close to a fourth of my colleagues here in Park City are involved in real estate. And, you know, hopefully I'm
not
selling.
Is that all?
when the time comes to sell my house and or to buy my house, you know, it's going to be a tough decision. And I think a question everybody's interested in is, you know, what should you look for in a real estate agent? And we've got the format where we can delve into this a little more. What makes a good real estate agent? What should you look for if you've got a half a dozen or a dozen friends that are in the business? How do you decide who's right for you?
Well, first of all, I think it's an absolute must. You have to make sure they're doing it full time. That is their career. That is their career, pure and simple. And you know it. I mean, you know there are licensed realtors, and then there are licensed hangers, you know, that go and hang their license somewhere and do it as a hobby. I personally don't. It's funny because, I mean, you're not going to a heart surgeon for, you know, who's doing one operation a year, or an attorney who's taking one case a year. So it's, you know, I think that's the standard we as a group are trying to bring the industry up to, and hopefully the consumers. Sure, it's nice to throw your buddy a bone. But at the end of the day, if it's a true friend,
probably
they have to come to you.
One of your largest assets, though. I mean, you've got to handle it properly.
They do, and they have to come to you and be honest with you and say, if they're truly a friend, and say, look, this is just maybe out of my league. Now, they can refer it. Everybody that has a license has a right to make money. But the proper thing to do in that situation, if they are not full-time, is to refer it out to one of their colleagues that is doing it full-time.
Let's in the amount of I think we've got a good handle on your coalition. So let's just talk real estate, a favorite topic in Park City, one of the favorite topics certainly. What's going on now? It seems to be a frenzy. I mean, I've been here 35 years and have seen lots of cycles. And have seen lots of inflationary where prices were going up 1% a month on a, you know, a year or two basis, and followed by the crash. Right now, we seem to be in a pretty unprecedented position where properties, and I know this because I just bought one, and I had to buy it on the day it was listed, or it would have been gone. And in fact, when we were done with our showing, there was another agent with another client waiting at the door. I mean, this is nuts, isn't it? I mean, have you seen it like this before?
I've seen it like this back in 2006, 2007. However, the frenzy, it was like that until about the middle of May. And then things seem to have slowed down in the last 6 weeks a little bit. I have a premier listing in Silver Springs that we thought we'd have multiple offers the first day, and all we've had is one lowball offer so far, and it's been on almost 60 days. And there were several other listings in the Silver Spring area that popped up about the same time, and they're kind of sitting and waiting. Then again, I had three scheduled showings of a listing I have in Summit Park yesterday. So, you know, there's pockets.
Well, there's different markets, certainly.
That's correct.
And the like $2 to $5 million house, there seems to be an infinite variety,
right,
on the market, and they're not moving. But anything that's the least bit affordable, and I have to laugh when you now think of an affordable house as being one that's under $1 million. That's just nuts in and of itself. But yeah. But there are different markets, and that market that I can't call it entry-level market, but the lower-end market is what's really flying off the shelf, right?
Well, it is entry-level, and 500 to a million is a one-week listing in most cases. If it's
a one-week listing.
A one-week listing. So it's strong. It's the strongest I've seen it in my 23 years here. I think it's healthier than 06 in regards to people have more skin in the game.
It's not speculators. It's so much as people who want to move here.
They're putting a lot of money down and or cash. But even the people that are financing, the banks are still being pretty tough on underwriting. So, I mean, that's a good thing. I do not want to see 06 recreated again.
Yeah, well, what's driving it today? Why in the last 6 months has it gone ballistic?
You lack inventory in a lot of the micro markets that nobody's wanting to sell at this point in time. And so people are holding out for higher prices. There's a lot of not great homes being put on the market at some really interesting prices. And so quality inventory is something that's very difficult to find.
Well, let's talk about inventory, because my understanding, and I'm not in the real estate profession, my understanding is there's a lot of new inventory coming out pretty soon. There's some major developments either here in the Park City area or nearby in Wasatch County. What's going on with the new developments? For people that aren't watching it, what are some of the bigger projects going on?
Well, I think Park City Heights is clearly one of the bigger ones that we've all been waiting for, and they've been kind of hesitant at, you know,
that has been the slowest starting subdivision I've ever seen. We're in the third year of
I think
of,
they had some environmental issues out there, if I'm not mistaken, and so on and so forth, that they had to gather themselves on. And frankly, the developer is not ignorant. He's, you know, been watching the prices rise and rise. So I promise prices today when you can get more tomorrow if you keep holding back. So there's a lot of people that are eager to see what that product's going to offer, some of the move-up buyers in the area.
And I understand there's a pretty big developments going on in Wasatch County as well.
Well, Wasatch County, I mean, is going off the hook. Midway, Heber City, you know, again, there's little pockets over there. I don't know about anything that's massive in scale, but certainly the developers are starting to look at the land prices over there again and building houses. And frankly, there are, I think, a lot of locals. I've never heard so many locals say to me over the last 6 months, I'm starting to look at Heber, I'm starting to look at Oakley. Oakley's hot right now. People looking for their piece of paradise, maybe for 10 years down the road, they want to buy land.
I've heard people say, you know, Oakley's kind of the town similar to what Park City was 20 years ago, and they miss that, right, where it's not as developed. Frankly, I like having all these services and amenities, but there's people that, you know, want their peace and quiet and don't want events going on every weekend.
I think it's more than Park City of 20 years ago. I think we're now getting to where that was the Park City of 40 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, if you're interested, do you combine or link your websites together or have a combined site?
We're working on that project right now. The technology aspect is we will have a website, but if anybody wants to get a hold of us right now, it's just, Google any of us, Park City Realty Group, Mountain Town, Bald Eagle, and Glen Wild Realty, and you can talk to any one of us. We're all on the same page.
Very fine. Well, thanks for joining us. Mike Mazzoni of Park City Realty Group and Jim Harsh of Mountain Town Realty Group, partnering with Bald Eagle and Glen Wild in the Independent Real Estate Coalition. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And stay tuned. Up next will be Richard Reed with Zions Bancorp, and he's going to talk about the chip we're all going to have in our credit cards pretty soon to make it more secure. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW.
This is Craig McCarthy with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Being a member of the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business and provides a wide array of benefits. We promote your business, provide networking and educational opportunities, and even have benefit programs for you and your employees. For more information, visit us online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit, membership-based organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Support for KPCW comes from the Wasatch Brew Pub, offering weekend brunch at the top of Main Street featuring traditional favorites, as well as midday Marys and mimosas. Private event space available. Wasatch Brew Pub, misbehaving in Utah since 1986. WasatchBeers.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Always interesting what's going on in real estate. And you know, Larry, since I've been here, I moved here in 2006, it's either really hot. Or it tends to be, it got cold really quickly during the recession.
This is the craziest market, and I can attest to it personally.
You're going through it right now.
I am going through it right now, and it's not just kind of an overheated, frenzied market in certain areas, but it's also more challenging than any time I remember in trying to apply for a loan. The amount of documentation, and there are new documentation requirements coming, and I know the realtors I talk to say starting in August, it's going to take 8 weeks to close a standard loan. That's if there are no hiccups in the loan. It could be as much as 8 weeks to close one. So kind of a crazy situation. Like they said, anything under $1 million will close inside of a week of listing.
But it may be 8 more weeks until you do your final closing.
Yeah.
And speaking of banks, on the phone with us today is Richard Reed. He's the Executive Vice President and Director of Bank Card and Customer Channel Management at Zions Bank Corporation. Richard, thank you for joining us this morning on Mountain Money.
Good morning. It's my pleasure to be here.
Good morning. So I, in the teaser and in the promos, mentioned several of us already have credit cards with a chip in them. I think everybody's familiar with that. But tell us, what does the chip do?
Well, the chip is actually becoming a substitute for the mag stripe that's on the back of the card that we're all so used to swiping when we actually make a card transaction, whether it's credit card or debit card. It's a microprocessor, and what it does is, again, it stands in for the information that's on the mag, which is, if you look at the front of your card, it's that 16-digit account number and expiry. And that flows through the system and helps us authorize a transaction. The chip now, though, as a stand-in, functions as a microprocessor, and it sends a cryptogram along with every transaction that can only be decoded by the financial institution's back-end authorization system. And as a result, it makes that transaction a whole lot more secure and more difficult for fraudsters to counterfeit.
So now, on one of my cards, I see a printed circuit, or at least a picture of a printed circuit. Maybe it is the printed circuit on the front of the card. Is there always something visible to know if you have a chip card?
Yes, and it typically will always appear on the sort of the mid part of the left side of the front face of the card. And you're correct. It looks just like a printed circuit, and it is not just a logo, if you will. It is an actual computer chip.
So does this mean, you say this replaces the mag stripe, so does this mean every merchant in America needs a different kind of reader?
Yes, it does.
And how long does that kind of adaption take place?
Great question. It'll take a few years. When we've evaluated some of the other markets around the world, and the most recent one that went to chip card technology was Canada, it takes about 3 years to get to what we consider a true ubiquitous level of acceptance of chip cards via merchant terminals that have been replaced. By the end of this year, we expect that the merchant marketplace will probably be sitting around the 40 to 50% terminalization level, and the number of cards in market that will be issued by financial institutions that will have chip technology will probably be in the order of magnitude of 60 to 70% of credit cards and probably somewhere around 40% of debit cards.
And I would guess that the larger merchants are going to be the first to go. I think everybody's attention was caught by what happened to Target last year. Subsequently, the chief technology officer of Target resigned over that. That's a nice job to have, to be the CTO of a big corporation like Target. And if you're the CTO of Walmart or any other large organization, I can guarantee you they're going to be rolling these chips out, because it's just an unwinnable battle against these hackers with our current technology. So, my question is, okay, so a year from now we have 40% or so of the physical transactions taking place with these chip cards. How do we protect all the multiple purchases we all do online over the internet? How do we protect that better?
That's a great question as well. The challenge with deploying EMV at the point of sale or chip cards at the point of sale is that it really only solves that side of the fraud equation. If a card is compromised through merchant breach, they can always still produce a counterfeit magstripe card and go online to use it. The industry is actually trying their best to address that element of the fraud risk as well as the point of sale, but it'll take a bit longer to implement that. In particular, when you start looking at what's happening in the mobile payment space, what we're finding is that a lot of the transactions that will happen in the future through mobile devices like tablets and even mobile phones, eventually they will become what we call tokenized transactions. And what that means is that it has the ability to fully encrypt that 16-digit account number and expiry information as it flows through the system. So we are trying at the industry level to go ahead and tackle this fraud issue very holistically, but unfortunately the time schedules will not completely line up. So I would assume that the card-not-present or the internet-type transactions, to really shore that up, we're probably looking at another 2 years, at least around that time frame. So I think we just have to be vigilant. We have to look at our online banking statements and really monitor the transactions and get fraud alerts and transaction alerts. The more we do that, the more quickly we can stop this fraud.
Yeah, and you mentioned tokenization. The other nice thing about the tokenization is even if that token does get compromised, it's only good for one transaction. It cannot be used multiple times.
That's correct.
Being vigilant, I think, is a really important topic to discuss with our audience. And unfortunately, the hackers are extremely sophisticated. If you get what's called the man-in-the-middle attack, where somebody somehow hooks up your Wi-Fi and it looks like you're going directly to these websites, but you're not, they can actually fake your bank account. So if you go online to look at your bank account, it looks like everything's fine. So I agree with your point. Frankly, I don't know what the solution is. I guess you would have to call periodically and actually look at your physical mailings if you're still getting those, because the hackers are getting very sophisticated. Do you have advice for folks on how to better stay vigilant on their banking situation?
You know, I think that signing up for, again, fraud alerts and transaction alerts, so even if you had that man-in-the-middle attack that you referenced, that it becomes virtually impossible to circumvent those transaction alerts that come to you. So you'd get direct visibility. So even if there was that man-in-the-middle, and I will tell you, in the financial services industry, that is not a very common situation. It Zions Bancorp and other, bigger banks especially, you know, we take that very, very seriously, and we do everything we can to prevent that. Now, to your point, fraudsters are incredibly sophisticated, so you want to be vigilant. And again, I think that having that transaction alert and fraud alerts is the best way to stay completely on top of all of your payment transactions.
Yeah, the other thing, and we just have a minute to talk about it, but also debit cards versus credit cards. If you're using a debit card, and they look like credit cards, so maybe some folks are confused or grab one when they think they're grabbing the other. A debit card is taking money directly out of your checking account or savings account, whatever it's linked to. So you have, if fraud's involved, you have no chance of recovery. Versus a credit card in which the credit card company is the one laying out the money, and then you have some ability to avoid the transaction.
Well, the zero fraud liability does apply to both debit and credit.
So, okay.
Yeah, your payment, when you use your payment card, you're well protected. I think your point, though, is that on a debit card, it's accessing your checking account, which is your ready funds. You really want to probably be more judicious in where you use that debit card, because it could take, 24 to 48 hours to go ahead and put money back in a debit card account. And for those people that have liquidity challenges and live, check to check, if you will, you want to make sure that in online transactions, you're always safer using a credit card, just because you're going to probably be more prone to fraud in that area.
Our guest today has been Richard Reed. He's the Executive Vice President and Director of Bank Card and Customer Channel at Zions Bancorp. Richard, thank you for joining us. And before I let you go, I also want to say thank you to Zions. You guys are your firm is very generous in supporting philanthropic causes, both in Park City and in Utah. And frankly, from a personal standpoint, I think Utah is a better place to live because you guys are so generous and supportive of all the not-for-profits here in town. Thanks for joining us, and thank you to Zions.
My pleasure. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
And we'll be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this. This is KPCW Park City, serving Summit and Wasatch counties with local news, information, and entertainment found nowhere else on radio. We're your community station, here for you 24 hours a day.
This Lost and Found report brought to you by Realtor Julie Hopkins knows the Park City and Deer Valley lifestyles. jhparkcity.com, 901-0616. Mountain Auto Repair in Heber, providing Subaru service and repair, 654-ABCD. And Park City Title Company, providing escrow services in Summit and Wasatch counties, 649-8322.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. The last couple of minutes, the market is rebounding nicely. Greece has been a mess for years.
It's been a crazy week.
For years it's been a mess, but it came to a head last week and today. But things seem to be on the mend.
Well, if you look at last week, we're pretty much where we were talking a week ago Monday, Larry. But we had a big dip down and then a recovery. And there's not entire clarity as to what the solution is, if any, yet.
Yeah, I have a friend traveling in Greece right now. And
I hope he took a lot of euros with him.
And it'll be interesting to find out what kind of circumstances he's had trying to hit the ATM machines in Greece. So, interesting stuff. Well, it is heading to a high of 80 degrees today under sunny skies, mostly cloudy tonight, mostly sunny again tomorrow, high around 80 most of the week, and 89 or so, maybe 90 over in the Heber Valley for most of the week, looking like a spectacular summer week. I want to thank our guests for being here today, Renee Robertson with her book called The Coaching Solution, How to Drive Talent Development, Organizational Change, and Business Results. Also, Mike Mazzoni and Jim Harsh with the Real Estate Coalition, and Richard Reed with Zions Bank.
And we also want to thank our great sponsors, Mountain West Bank, Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, and Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough. Thank you to all those great organizations for your support.
And next tomorrow on at this hour, it'll be This Green Earth with Chris and Nell. And next week, we will talk about an interesting book, Disrupt You. This is KPCW, Park City.